The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is October 26, 2015, and we are sponsored by Dr. William Wong. That's Dr. Wong's Essentials, www.docsprefer.com. He's on here monthly, and he's sponsoring me to go to Iceland next year. Sorenex.com, 803-978-2253, extension 111. Bert's on here monthly, and his dad's usually on here every 3 months, Richard, and they were nice enough to sponsor me with a diamond bar for Iceland too, which is an oversized trap bar you can use in the power rack and press with it. I thank him for that. Next, we have Hearts Collision. This is for New York State residents only. That's heartscollision.com. 518-477-7937. Give Lori and Alex a call and tell them we sent you. Also, adexclub.com. That's our good friend Donnie Giafardino. He's a regular on the show now, too. Check that out, adexclub.com. Also, too, don't forget the top 10 ways to build mind and muscle on Fiorella Barbell Co. Download that for free. Basic, simple, what I love to talk about. It always works. Strength times power equals success in the winner's circle. Those are our two biggest products to date. They should be fully out this week. We're doing all the behind-the-scenes stuff for promotion, et cetera, et cetera. So go out to FiorellaBarbellCo.com on that. And don't forget about sponsorship. It's $500 a month, but I'm doing 5 to 15 podcasts a week. You're being mentioned on the beginning and the end of the show. And everybody knows that $30 of the $500 goes to Muscular Dystrophy Association. That's what my brother Jimmy died of. And both FBC and M&M are both dedicated in his memory. This time of year, when they get colds, they can be fatal. And the $30 goes for a flu shot. I secured that all with MDA. That's what killed my brother. He got the flu, and as a young teenager, they couldn't save him. My parents did everything they could. So go out to FiorellaBarbellCo.com for that and Motivation Muscle and just fill out the form, and let's work together for the next 25 years because this show is going to have over a million listeners when I'm done with it. And last but not least, Chris Bigelow does all the magic here, MonsterDevelopment.com, 800-687-1609. Tell him Eric sent you. Well, today we have a first-time guest, and anybody that's never heard of Dan John is going to hear of him now. I'm going to give you a small breakdown on him, then, and we'll have him come on, give a little bio, and we'll move right into the subject. First of all, Olympic lifter, Highland Games, writer, a guy that's been involved in the weight community. I've known of him for years, man, and I've wanted to get him on the show, and I chased him down and got him here. So, Dan John, welcome to Motivation and Muscle, sir.
Well, thanks so much, and good morning to you.
Good morning to you, too. Give everybody a short bio, and we're gonna get into the basic training, the lifts that give the most bang for the buck, because right now I think there's a lot of people that aren't sure, especially the younger kids, and we like to clear that up for them today. So, Dan, take it away, please.
So, short bio first or go right into the question?
I want people to know about you because we're going to go with the assumption you like us so much you want to come back. That's what we do. Okay, so go with that.
Yeah, I'm 58 years old. I train every day. I was in the ninth grade. I read a book called The Track and Field Omni Book that said that Ralph Vaughn at Utah State University was the best discus coach in America. And so in ninth grade, at 118 pounds and 103-foot discus thrower, I decided to go to Utah State to throw the discus. And at that time, I discovered that if you set goals that are worthy and achievable, you get them. And it's all the other stuff that makes you successful, the grades and the hard work and the discipline. And so I was MVP up there at Utah State, kept throwing the discus my entire career. I retired in 2010 because of I needed two surgeries and I just barely could move anymore. So in 2004, at age 46, I had the best season of my life. So that'll tell you a little bit about how longevity and throwing. I did the Highland Games for a long, long time. Just did one a couple weeks back. And most of my time I spend as a professor of religious studies. But I also have this bizarre hobby called Olympic lifting and weightlifting. So everything I learn in geometry, theology, and philosophy, I just apply to the weight room. And you'll be more right than wrong if you study geometry as a strength coach.
Absolutely. What do you think today, Dan, as far as, you know, you see a lot of it. I train people here. I mean, I'm getting ready for all kinds of stuff. What is it in the strength field right now? Because we have so many people that have various niches, and, you know, anybody can hang a shingle out on the front of their building and show you a trophy, but that doesn't really mean squat to me. Where are we lacking, or where are the, especially talking about upcoming, like, teenagers for the sport? What is it that's lacking right now, and what are the big bang movements, you know, that you feel are going to really pay dividends for these kids to start and grow down the road, especially if they want to be competitive?
Well, I mean, here's the answer. The answer, I think, is the Olympic lifts and the loaded carry family. That's your prowler, your sleds, your farmer walks. See, to me, that's the answer. But the problem is, the question is, and that's the answer. But the problem is the question. I'm a strong believer that there's basically five fundamental movements: push, pull, hinge, squat, loaded carry. And if you can't prove to me you can hold those positions, if you can hold them, if you're symmetrical, and if you can hold them under any kind of ballistic hit, I personally don't believe you should move on. And so with me, I've spent a lot of my career really working on regressions. Many of my athletes and the guys I work with are beat up from their chosen occupation, chosen profession. So they literally can't do the answer, the Olympic lifts. They can't. Their tricep isn't connected anymore, or their knees are garbage, but they make a lot of money doing what they do. So for me, I have this little matrix I use. It's push, pull, hinge, squat, loaded carry, just like that. And at first, I test to see if you can hold a plank in the position. It's funny because, you know, you might get a young person who wants to do the Olympic lifts, but I don't know if you know what the glute bridge or the pelvic tilt is. They can't hold a plank, that plank position, that glute bridge. Well, if they don't have the gluteal, if they've got gluteal amnesia, they can't even squeeze their butt cheek. And yet they want to learn the Olympic lifts. They can't do a goblet squat, but they want to back squat 700 pounds because that's what Coach read that some NFL lineman did. And so I start with those fundamental plank movements, the goblet squat and the farmer walk. Funny thing is, you would look at the goblet squat, the suitcase carry, the farmer walk, and say, those aren't planks. But then, as I told Stu McGill years ago, and I think loaded carries are moving planks. So they are planks. If you can handle that, then we move into the basic barbell family, calisthenic family. If you can handle the grinding slow movements, then I test your symmetry. Many people come to me, one arm presses, one arm right, one arm left, military and bench. Maybe I just look at the way you squat and see which way you twist or don't twist. Ideally, don't twist. But if you're filled with asymmetry issues, we can't move on to any explosive ballistic movement. But if you pass all that, then I bring you into that family of things I call the Litvinov. So that's where you would do something like a squat immediately followed by a sprint, or a deadlift. This is an interesting one. A deadlift followed by bear crawl. That's a very good one for football. And if you can handle those, then we move on to the Olympic lifting family. If and this is a big if we have the if you're a ninth grader, no question about it. If you're 29 years old and the tail end of your career, no, we're gonna get you 1, 2, 3 more seasons. So the more time I have with you, and I'm talking about calendar time, the more we'll move up that little, I hate to call it a pyramid. It's really not. It's a progression. And in fact, even by saying the word progression, people think there's this good. There's no moral theology in the weight room. There's no good or bad or good or evil. It's just a movement. But if I have calendar years with you, we'll try to teach you everything of all the power lifts, all the kettlebell moves, all the old lifts. Mm-hmm. If we don't necessarily have the time, then we'll just stay where we are and get as far as we can with load and reps.
No, that's not, yeah. I found one thing, and I discovered this recently, and I wish I knew this years and years ago when you're talking about loaded and carrying and things. Sandbag or a big stone out in front of you, bear hugging and rolling as far as you can. That's done more for me than anything I've probably ever done. It's made every lift better. You know, I have a 95-foot driveway, so I'm carrying these stones I designed out of steel that has the exact dimensions of the Húsafell from Iceland, and we load them with shot, and we can put them plates on these stones on each corner of the stone. Phenomenal. I've got kids now working here. One of the first thing they start with is they learn how to bear hug and carry.
Right.
I think I wish I knew this when I started out. I think I could have been a hell of a better athlete, a lot quicker. But you know something? It's like everything in life. You learn through the years. You learn by, you know, making mistakes. You learn from your mistakes, whatever you're going to call it. I found that carrying, if I had to pick one thing right now, and they said, you know, because I love squatting and all that, if they said there's one thing you can do now for the next year and that's all you can do, I'd take that steel stone and I'd turn into, I'd probably look like a grizzly bear after a year with that.
Well,
go ahead.
I call that anaconda strength, because you need that internal pressure.
Yep.
And when you see somebody, we call him looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane, you know, kind of a bodybuilder guy trying to do Highland, and they're very bad. It's because they don't have that internal pressure.
Yep.
And if you want to be an Olympic hammer thrower or do the Highland Games, you need that internal push out pressure, and then all you do is move your feet.
Yep.
If you can generate enough of that pressure internally and move your feet, I just explained every throwing event to you. And when people talk about a word like core or things like that, they still get back to the six pack concept, which is probably every muscle is important, but the least important muscles of the core would be the six pack when we're talking about throwing strength or our competitive strength. And it's funny because kids will want six packs and they want to play at the next level in football. And it's like, dude, no one cares about your six pack. Nobody cares. You know, you'll have to pull your shirt up to show your opponent that you have a six pack. And honest to God, trust me, it ain't going to matter. You know?
Yeah. Yep. Definitely. You know, do you think, I mean, strongman has really caught on, I think, more so. I mean, I know CrossFit is a thing everybody kind of refers to now, but strongman's taken a big stride, I think, you know. Why do you think strongman has become bigger than big? I mean, when you watch guys like Zivikas and, of course, Brian Shaw and all that, but what I like about strongman is you can take and translate a lift that could be very heavy right down to a 25 or a 50-pound sandbag to start using. Do you feel strongman has a lot of benefit to whatever you're working with? I mean, I know with what I do with all that stuff, it's really made my weightlifting much better. What's your feeling on that, Dan?
Well, you know, a decade ago when the strongman stuff first started coming over into what I do, like always, everyone just went overboard. I mean, it just all of a sudden you had NFL guys doing the yoke and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
all that stuff has value. I mean, you could get certified in strongman conditioning. It's like, what the hell? I mean, how much work do you need to learn how to farmer walk? I mean, do you really need to go to a class to learn farmer walk? I mean, so what happened is, it's funny you say it's rising. In what I do, it's drifting off. The problem is, as always, is that we took something that had great value, great potential, and instead of adding it intelligently into a system, we threw out everything else and said, this is the answer. And that's what kills us in our field, is that everyone's always looking for the next answer. And the truth is, we know what it is. Listen, if you have a high school team and every single boy in that team snatches 200 and clean and jerks 300, I like your chances.
Yeah.
I like your chances. Now, if none of them have six packs, I still like your chances.
Yep.
And yet we throw the baby out with the bathwater or any other cliche you want to throw. So what I've noticed with strongman, and as I said, it came in, it offered us a lot of insights, and then we just went too far with it.
Okay.
There's a local university here who strength coached 10 years ago. Funny thing is, here's an interesting thing. They had undefeated seasons in football doing this method, and of course they threw it out. But they went overboard, and so that now you're training your athletes to be strongmen or power lifters or Olympic lifters and not football. The best thing I've learned from strongmen is they reintroduced time back into the weight room. Mm-hmm. So one of the problems that we were getting before 2004 or so was that everything was and I'm as guilty as any person in the world. It's my fault. We're all reps and sets. What strongman brings back is time.
Yep.
And so, you don't – if we have this Highland Games where the farmer walk is 250 pounds per hand.
Mm-hmm.
And to watch someone set up to do the farmer walk at 250 per hand, it's a 500-pound deadlift.
Absolutely.
And it's fascinating to watch. If someone just goes for, say, 18 yards, it might take that person the better part of a minute from set up to drop,
mm-hmm.
just to go that short amount of distance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, to me, that's the lost gem of – that's the thing we miss with strongman training.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are working with a track athlete or a football player or a wrestler doing strongman training, what you're teaching this athlete to do is to – wrestle with the implement to – which is – and there's no clock on it.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is to pick up that bag and move it to there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's funny because you always tell people don't do loaded carries. They'll ask stupid questions like how many reps and sets. You just look at them like you obviously haven't done it. Well, how do you know?
Because
you asked that stupid question.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we got time constraints here, but I want it before we got to go off and all that. We already talked about what you feel are the best movements. All right, if I've got a kid right now and he's got no experience, let's just come in with that, very little weightlifting experience behind him. If we're going to let's just pigeonhole him and concentrate on one movement, say, for 60 days, what do you say at that point?
Well, that's a rough one, but I always do this. Here's my concept.
Okay.
For improving a kid, any athlete, is maintain the squat, improve the hinge.
Yep.
So I hate to break your thing into two, but that's why I'd be very comfortable with this young athlete really learning, mastering the goblet squat, really taking their time to get deep, learn to push those elbows out, and then even have them do maybe deadlifts off boxes for a while to learn that loaded hinge movement.
Yep.
If you can teach the kettlebell swing, and then you would move on from that heavy, the remaining deadlift is another great one if you can teach it well. That's the tough one with that damn movement.
Yep.
From there, you go from the swing to maybe the Olympic lifts to the full from the floor deadlift.
Yep.
To me, so it would always be a member of the hinge family because there's two things that improve athletes, the hinge family and the loaded carry family.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is hypertrophy. And other, so the push, the pull, and the squat are all important, but those three develop hypertrophy, mobility. Interesting enough, but it's the hinge family and the loaded carry family that makes the athlete thrive.
Absolutely.
So if you have the courage to do rack deadlifts and farmer walks, you're gonna really develop an athlete. At the same time, long term, that pattern of the squat is going to be there, is always going to be there with a sword hanging over their head. So for me, when I always think that the perfect program is a mix of the power lifts and the Olympic lifts and the loaded carry family. So the perfect program is a whole bunch of things.
Yeah. Go ahead.
When I first started, what we did was power clean, military press, front squat, and bench press.
Yep.
And I still look back. This is when I was young. I mean, that's 13 years old. And I look back on that, and I still think that's probably the best base of a kid. And then if you have the courage to have them run two laps, do some obstacle courses, monkey bars, have them play on a dip station, show them, you know, again, if you have, sorry about that. If you have calendar years, you can do a heck of a lot with a young athlete.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Now, if you don't.
Hi, I got Dan John here with me, and we've been really talking about lots of stuff, especially the heavy poles and the walking and how much that influences, he believes, the success of an athlete. Dan, one of the big questions I've got, obviously, is you've seen so much of the mental end, especially with you being a top athlete and everything you've touched. What's changed since you started out? And let's talk about the athlete of, say, your era and then what's going on now, and if we can draw something between the two.
Well, I mean, you always have to be careful. You know, Marcus Aurelius, Seneca, all yep. complained about this generation isn't as tough as ours. In the 1930s, the general said that the American youth isn't tough enough for a war. And those guys turn out to be the greatest generation. So you got to worry about is a little bit of a thing. I'm 58. So when I judge the next generations coming up, I'm also at the same time realizing that I could be freakishly wrong too.
Yep.
One of the things that's the biggest difference, I mean, and everyone knows this, there's no surprise here. It's not the athletes, it's the athletes' parents. Mm-hmm. And many of us, I'm shocked to see, I was at a party the other night, Chris Long's birthday party, and just the frustration. I was frustrated with parents earlier than these guys. but in some cases, my friends were coaching still their own children. So if you're coaching your own kid, it changes things a little bit. But once your child graduates or retires or whatever, the parents today, they go online, they read about what the elite of the elite are doing, and they want to transfer that somehow to what little Billy's doing, who's 12.
Yeah.
One of my favorite stories is this about, it's got to be 2005, I guess, is that this dad went online at the school I was coaching and brought this thing by the school, and he said, my son's going to throw the discus. I found this thing online about discus throwing. And I said, that's interesting. You know who the author is? It was my book. He didn't have the insight to look that the Dan John who was coaching his son and the Dan John who wrote The Contrarian Approach to the Discus might be the same guy. It's just funny to hear him because he was telling me to do these things. It's like, that's what we do at practice. Your son doesn't do them at practice because your son never goes to practice.
Yep.
If he ever showed up, I bet you I'd have him do those things. That's the biggest one. I mean, my parents' generation felt like they were doing a pretty good job if you got fed three times a day and you had a roof.
Yep.
This is not at all diminishing the importance of my parents or any of that generation. But nowadays, God, the other issue, and this is a small side one, you know, if we could get back to relatively free tuition, it's interesting because all these psychopaths who are hyper-conservatives in America today and they have all these things. I have a brother who's very conservative, and when he was in college, he could work for 6 weeks at minimum wage and pay for room and board for the semester.
Yep.
Now, I want all your listeners to hear what people who are the generation, the years just a little bit older than me. So in 6 weeks at minimum wage, you could pay your tuition and your room and board. Mm-hmm. Well,
that's yeah. Think about that.
Yeah, you go through that. Just give now. If college wasn't so expensive today, I think some of the parents would get back to the idea that I'm a huge believer. I believe, by the way, very much in intramural sports and in scholastic sports. I'm a big fan of those two. It's funny. I tell people intramurals, and they don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. And I'm stunned because We've gotten rid of intramurals. Scholastic sports, especially on the female side, are very unimportant. Every girl's in a club, club soccer, club volleyball. And folks, you're wasting. Take that money, put it in a coffee can and bury it in your backyard.
Yep.
You'll do better long-term than thinking your daughter's going to get a scholarship. Here's the funny thing. I have had parents whose child gets a scholarship, and it's like, isn't this great? It's like, no. Now they're faced with four or five more years of constantly finding out that somebody else was recruited for their position.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't mind this long-winded, boring
thing. No, go ahead.
I think it's one of the things that's hurting now is parents are seeing sports as some kind of ticket to success. Yeah. Now, truth is, it worked for me. This guy here, Dan John, it worked for me. But at the same time, my daughters both went through school, very great educations. Kelly went to Columbia, Lindsay, University of Utah. Neither of them, they both graduated with no debt, zero.
That's nice. Nice.
Well, because academics, because of the academic side. So
yep.
If I could just, if you don't mind my this whole thing.
No, go ahead.
I believe in sports. I think every child should play individual sport because it teaches life lessons about self-discipline and kind of turning on your own engine. I also believe a child should play a team sport because there's life lessons about I do my job, you do your job, he does his job, good things happen. If I try to do your job, bad things happen. Mm-hmm. And then, but I also believe the child should also be in something where they have to stand up in front of a crowd and I wouldn't say embarrass themselves, but either sing or do a play or something like that. And I believe when you lose any of those foundations of why we're doing these things, yeah, I don't necessarily want my daughters to be in politics, but they were in student body government.
Right.
I wanted them to have the courage to stand up in a group of their peers and say something that might not have been popular. You talk about a goal. How about that?
Yeah,
excellent. An adult skill. I can stand up in front of peers and tell them something they might not want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So long road back. I just think that there's this modern parent we have now that thinks that their child somehow is a ticket.
And, oh, yeah.
And it bothers me at about 300 different levels. But what helped me the most is I come from a very, very athletic family. A cousin who was the NFC Defensive Player of the Year in the National Football League. Many cousins play at the higher levels of college football. My brothers were all in college track. So in our family, college sports was a way to play sports in college.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was. It wasn't some ticket to something. It was simply, it's absolutely, there's no question the value of it. My daughter Lindsay was a state shot put champ, and she's not very tall, and she's blonde, blue-eyed. And I say, for the rest of your life, when you have, I was a state shot put champion listed on your resume, people will always ask you that. And she's like 12 for 12 in interviews, where people said, shot put, isn't that that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's so.
Yes, but yeah, it's a door opener.
It's
let's face it.
So
yeah,
here's my point, I guess, and I have one. I believe 100% in the value of sports.
Yep.
If the child, the athlete, wants to be involved in it,
mm-hmm.
but if it's just and by the way, I've coached kids who just want to have a jersey. They just want to be part of something, and God bless them too. But the parent has to understand that this kid ain't going to play in the NFL.
Exactly.
If they're from the state of Utah, they're not going to play in the NBA. Ain't going to happen. You know, all those great Montana and Idaho NBA players you hear about. You know.
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Yep.
Even if they're in a club team.
You know?
So I know that was long-winded, but I
– No, that's fine. That's fine. I'll tell you 2 points. My brother-in-law coaches a suburban school here in you know, New York. They're in Guilderland, and they're having the best year I think they ever have. They're going now into I don't know if you'd call it the first bowl game before they go to, I think it's two more to go to the big dance where they'll go down and play a New York City team and get killed, because I think half the guys on the team are like 25 years old.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. But I've been at many of those games because I like watching at that level, but that level has become like every other level of football where, you know, we talked about earlier in the show about the strongman stuff and how maybe now it's been exploited to the point where what once was something that I feel, this is my feeling about strongman. I like it because I think it's, what's the word I want to use? Maybe more archaic. That's probably not a good one. Maybe more primal, which is used probably too much. Mm-hmm. But I just like the feel of it. I'll just put it that way. It feels good to me. And we'll leave it there. But you see that all through that genre now. You know, they're carrying this. And one good thing, yes, my brother-in-law is big on Farmer's Walk and tire flips, okay? Tire flips I think are great, but you got to know how to flip a tire. Sure. You're going to blow a bicep for sure. But that's a whole other thing. I go to those games, Dan, and I can't believe – now, these are people, and I know it's in everybody. I mean, these people are all making some money. I mean, they've got some stuff, okay? They act worse than, I mean, you would think none of them had any education, blah, blah, blah. You know, their kids are playing. Someone will say something, and you'll hear four-letter words, or I've been there where they almost went to fisticuffs, all right?
Oh, yeah.
A guy like me sitting there that's done some pretty cool stuff, and has lifted some pretty good things. I'm just sitting there and saying to myself, if I did that, they would say that would be expected of me because I'm basically a caveman or I've got a pea-like brain, and that's the way I settle everything. I'm watching these people. I'm like, I got to get out of here because I just can't even look at it, and that's very prevalent, as I'm sure you know. And then secondly, I'm working with a good friend of mine that's built a lot of equipment for me, and I've known him since I was a kid. Well, now I'm coaching his kid. He's 14, basketball player, shoved all over, 6'1". He was 143 when he came here 15 weeks ago. I got him up to 154 now, and his coach is very happy with him, his speed, everything's changed. But when you're talking about, like, with your daughters and things of that nature and the resume and all that, I don't let anybody come here without two things. Number one is he didn't have any experience. I knew that. But at 6'1", I knew he had some potential. And now the nice thing is he loves strongman so much. After basketball's over, we're going to put quite a bit of girth on this kid, and he wants to go into his first meet in May. And I couldn't be happier about it because he was very introverted. And when you were talking about speaking, the bell went off in my head. The first thing I made him do was buy the book Think and Grow Rich. For anybody that doesn't know anything about Think and Grow Rich, that's Napoleon Hill from the 30s. It's still very relevant. And I believe to this day, with all the stuff out there, it's one of the greatest books ever written. I got into Napoleon Hill via my business teacher, Frank Klein, in college. He was one of the greatest people I've ever met in my life. And he was a big mentor to me, really. And he was one of those people too, for our marketing class. I can't believe, I think it was about 90% of your grade, you had to get up and speak in front of a classroom of about 60, you know, fellow students. Well, I remember that room was filled that first day, and when he said it, you want to hear chairs and everything moving? People are literally running out that door because people are afraid to get up in front of people most of the time. They don't want to look bad like you were talking about. So, little Al, his name is Alex, great kid, and we started him out, and I started him with typical things like the carries, especially sandbag, a lot of step-ups. I didn't start him yet with squats, just a little bit with empty bar, but really concentrated on the trap bar deadlift, walking the Hoosa steel stones we built here, et cetera, et cetera. Well, not only did I make him his father, I require parents here between 13 and 18 years of age. No, there's no questions or anything. That's the way it is. If you don't want to be here with your son or daughter, you can't come here. I don't do one-on-one with young people. I've seen too many things happen to good people. So it's nice to have the parent there, and I like that. And he doesn't say too much, and that's the way I want it. number one, making him talk to like a crowd out there saying, okay, I'm doing a trap bar deadlift and this is what it hits when I do it. So I'm teaching him how things run like that and the book. And he's going to be on the podcast show next month. So I'm developing not only a confidence, but now a young man that can step out, is not afraid anymore. I tell him the same things. Don't be afraid to get laughed at. Don't be afraid of people singling you out. Be a leader. As my dad always said, be a leader, not a follower. You know, when you're a young kid, you're like, what the hell is my father talking about? You know, it's like, yeah, excuse me, okay, dad. Well, now as a grown man, I understand all those life lessons that he tried to teach me. Some I would listen to, some I didn't get till 20 years later. But with Alex now, Saturday, the best trap bar deadlift he had was 250. And he always did it very, very good and strong, good form. We're going to hit a 260. He hadn't done it in a few weeks. He nailed it, right? And I said to him, do you want to really go for the big one? And he's like, what? And I said, want to throw another 10 pounds? And I'll go, or 10 pounds, we'll go for 270. He goes, yeah, like that. And I got the video. I'm going to put it up because it was insane. I got to send Bert one of the video of him doing this. 270, we lob on there, and I said, all right, I want you to talk right into the camera here. I want you to tell everybody what you're doing and why you're doing it and how easily you're going to pull this thing right off the ground. Did the whole thing flawlessly, gets in the stance, dips down, it doesn't move. And I said to him, stand back up and get right back in, and you're going to rip it right off the ground. Watch it. God, by God, didn't he tear that thing off, Dan? I was so proud of him. He stood right up with it, and he put it down, and it was just great to see, because I see such a change in this young man now, where whether he does this for the rest of his life, and I hope he does, whatever capacity it is, we're building this power within him, this belief, this commitment, this drive, that he's got great parents, but coming here and kind of like pushing my attitude on him and what I believe has been magnificent for not only him, but for me too, because it's one of the best feelings you can have when you can help somebody and you just watch him get better and better, you know. And he'll be 15 in January, and we got another shot at something big. So I know that was kind of long-winded, but I have a lot of pride in what I do and what this young man's achieved.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, you know what I mean, to see things like that happen. Obviously, sports now, you know, sports is bigger than big. I got to admit to you, I really don't watch much sports. I'm not an NFL guy at all anymore. I haven't been into the NBA probably for 15 years at least. I like watching when I can find World's Strongest Man or some of the real old ones now that it's moved to CBS, or hockey if I'm going to watch hockey. I don't really watch much anymore. I'm not really into it's more like just a campaign, you know, a glitzy thing and all this stuff. I just like to see those guys get out on the field and play football, and that's the end of it. But I know it's entertainment now, and it's not, you know, there's a lot of money invested in it, et cetera, et cetera. And these players are treated like racehorses, and they've got to get them back out there, and they've got to take the best care of them they can, et cetera, et cetera. Where do you see, especially weightlifting right now? I mean, let's talk about Olympic lifting. I don't care about bodybuilding. That's not even a sport to me. Powerlifting, strongman. What do you think in the next few years? I mean, I know CrossFit is the big thing, but I'm not going to even mix that in with this hardcore stuff I want to talk about. Where do you see those three sports going in any direction, if anything? What do you think, Dan?
Well, what hurt powerlifting was the multiple federations. I mean, every time I go on Facebook, I see that somebody just broke a world record, and the numbers aren't world record numbers, but if they're federation or whatever.
Yep.
I worry about Olympic lifting becoming kind of a designer sport. I've thought for a long time they need to lengthen the bar, make the bars wider so that big men can snatch. The plates are too close to the ground. When I see the strongmen doing those deadlifts with the car tires, it's like, oh, yeah, that's where the bar should be.
Yep.
And it is. It's becoming a very much of a niche sport. You'll notice that only state-sponsored teams do well. Kind of only certain nations do. I worry about the strength sports a little bit, but that's not unusual. They tend to rise and fall. I would say it almost looks like in maybe 30 or 40 year waves. But 100 years ago, you could make a living going from town to town,
sure,
putting things over your head. Now, every time you go on Facebook, someone doing those same tricks. Back in the 50s and 60s, when Olympic lifting was at the top, it was funny because our state meet here in Utah in 1962, a guy who weighed 148 pounds snatched 225.
Well,
come on.
Yeah.
No one in our state meet lifts those kind of weights anymore. And it was it's a sport that I think would hurt. Seriously, I mean, still, it's a long time ago. But losing the press out of the Olympic lifts hurt.
Yeah. That's why I was going to ask you.
For the American audience.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, it hurt for the American audience. Because Americans understood the press, snatch, and clean and jerk. Now it's just the two lifts. But, what you'll see is some things. Do you remember how huge Highland Games got there for a while? And then
It's
backed up. But like everything, man, people ask me why I stopped going to Highland Games. It became a track meet in a kilt. There were 600 divisions. People are showing up with their tape measures to make sure the 28-pound weight was the right dimensions. Like, guys, when I first started at Highland Games, you were lucky if the equipment held together during an event.
Well, that's what I want to ask you, though. Because we got into this with multiple people. I had Randall Strassen on here one day, and I said, the press, would you restore the press? He said, no. I was like, why? And he's like, well, there's a lot of politics. And I've heard this from other people that it was dropped. They thought because Alexia was not a great presser, and it was all that. I don't know, and I'm going to ask you that in a second, what you think. But I really always thought the press just separated the men from the boys. I mean, when you watch a guy like Serge Redding, Ken Pater, obviously, Joe Doobie, any of those guys, on and on and on. What is your feeling about the press? Why was it dropped? And do you feel the same way where if you can press, and I'm talking even today, I mean, look, I've got nothing against the bench press, all right? I'm talking more of a floor press, not on a bench, laying on a platform, dead stopping it out of the rack the way we do it here if we're going to do it. But there's nothing to me like putting a dumbbell, a heavy dumbbell overhead, whether you're using two hands or you're doing a Thomas Inch if you can get to that point or whatever it is, a clean and press. What's your feeling? Why did the press go away?
Well, one thing that's funny is that my buddies who were just – so I'm 58, and I never went to a weightlifting meet with the press. It was over when I got there. So you're talking about – when I talk to my buddies who are now in their 60s, their biggest knock on the Olympic meets was it took so long. You'd be 3 in the morning all day. It was like a powerlifting meet. And so those guys would argue, yeah, don't ever bring it back. The meets went on forever. But so you're right. I've heard the politics of the press. Dick Notmeyer taught me how to Olympic press one time, and it basically was a standing bench press towards the end there. He taught me you kind of snap your hip flexors a certain way so the bar popped off your chest. And then it was fascinating to watch. I mean, it really was. But here's the thing. You're right. I have clean and pressed some good numbers in my life, and it's when I was able to stand, clean the weight, standing press it, like a press. Those are the strongest times of my life.
Yep.
But it's, the problem with the press is that to improve your press, you have to press. And you got to press a lot. And
yep.
Man, I tell you, it's without a contest. it gets kind of boring, I guess, you know. Yeah. I worry about the strength sports. I worry a lot about track and field. I think track and field, we haven't had world records in some of the events. You know, a good friend of mine is Mike Powell, who has the long jump record. And what is he at, 26 years now? I think he said it. And the Olympic, the most of your audience probably wasn't alive when the discus record showed up. And
well, I'm sure.
You have a sport that's completely stagnated because of, you know, I mean, a lot of reasons. Everyone will say drugs, 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 and I'm fine with that. There's some truth to that. But the other truth is you just – maybe can't jump any higher or farther as a human, you know? And when I was young, I went to the USA, USSR track meet. And that's when Jim Ryan broke the world,
world
record. But in the field events, you know, he's only 3 inches away from the world record. He's only 2 inches away. And then, and now if I throw the discus, 230 feet, my God, I'm still 13 feet from sneaking up on the world record.
Yep.
It's just silly. So I worry about track and field. I worry about any sports right now that have a human limit to them. Like Olympic lifting, the track and field. And that's why all these little, now they have the CrossFit. They have a rival to the CrossFit games and the lingerie football league and all. I got nothing against all this stuff, but the true family of Olympic sports might be tapped out in the 120 or so years since we revitalized the Olympics.
I think human nature has changed quite a bit. You know, we're going to have to get into this for sure. People are a lot softer now. At least that's what I see. I see lots of kids, they're not going to go and get their hands dirty if they don't have to. You're not going to see laborious jobs anymore. The stuff with all this, the social media. Now, look, you and I both know to get our messages out, I know with mine, I have to have it, all right? I have to have access to that. I have to have access to, you know, the internet. I have to be able to get my show out, et cetera, and reach more people via however I'm going to do it, whether it's some type of funnel to get people in. And, of course, word of mouth has been very good to me through this whole year. But I think right now, you know, when you're talking track and field, Olympic lifting, any of these sports, you know, you want to go to Iceland and lift the Husafell stone, Scotland, you know. One thing I will tell you, though, when I went to Iceland the first time in 08, it's like I've read stuff by Roger Davis, who wrote quite a bit for Randy's Milo there, and he was one of the guys on the tour with us. He was from the U.K. He was probably 180 pounds. I think pound for pound, he was one of the strongest people I've ever met in my life. I saw him wrestle a 360-pound stone till he bled, and he got it up. And he wrestled it, I bet, for 15 minutes. To this day, I have never been so impressed with a human being. And if you saw it, you could understand totally what I was talking about. But I think sports like that, I would talk to people in Iceland, they'd be like, well, why are you here? And I'd say, I'm going to go lift the Husafell stone. There wasn't one person I met, and I met tons of people because I love talking to people. They could have been anywhere from 25 to 70. Every one of them knew the Husafell stone. Very impressive because it had such a deep connection to their history and culture. Now, if I come back to here, a lot of that stuff doesn't matter. All right. And the way I see it with the sports we were just talking about, I don't think they'll disappear. I hope they don't. But I also don't see the physicality of and I can't say this about everybody, but I think those sports are a little bit too damn hard now. And I think if they could snowboard down a hill and get filmed to get endorsements, guess where they're going? They're not going to go and throw anything or, you know, grab cabers and flip them end over end. They're just not going to do that. Is it everybody? No. But I don't think you see that type of grit anymore. And if I'm wrong, correct me. I want to know what you feel about that.
Well, I I just know what it takes to be a discus thrower. And, you know, you better get used to 3, 4, 5, 6 hours by yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of my best memories of my father, he would come out with me and he would get out there and, you know, tell me about where it landed and throw it back a little bit. Funny story about my dad, real quick. We're talking about parents. Is I was a junior in college, and I would end up being the state champion. And I was also like, you know, I mean, it was a very good thrower, All American that year. And my coach Lahati comes over to me at one of the track meets. And he says, "Hey, Dan, are you being recruited by somebody who hasn't talked to me?" I go, "Why?" He goes, "At almost every track meet, this man in a suit comes up and talks to you." A man in a suit. He's a short guy. And I go, "Man in a suit." I go, "Oh, no, coach, that's my dad."
Isn't that awesome?
So I was his team captain. I was going to be his alt. So I was going to be his MVP. I was going to be a state champion. I was going to be the captain of a state championship team. And my coach had never met my father.
That's an awesome story. Holy God. Isn't that awesome?
So my father would not want to bother a coach, you know.
Yeah.
And no matter what coach said was right. And whatever I thought was wrong, by definition. And I just did delightful. Sorry, I didn't mean to go off. But
no, I think that's great.
So I think when you look at my father and the way he coached me or helped, and then you look at the way it is now, it's. But again, you know, I'm judgment free on this. I applaud a parent who cares about their kid. But the problem they don't understand is that there are kids like me who want that scholarship, who will cut your heart out for that scholarship or for that victory. And, it's hard. It's a hard – I got to tell you, to make a great athlete, you know, you have to dance on the edge of that razor. You know, you have to learn to try to fall asleep in great pain. You have to learn to, you know, do something – that hurt you before, and you're going to do it again, and it's going to hurt you again. And then you're going to have to choose these things that are boring and repetitive and do them. And I'm not saying, please, it's wonderful. It's great. But man, that's a tough sell, man. I was the head track coach at a high school. You know, kids would come out for track and I'd say, "What are you going to do?" "I want to be a sprinter." And I'd laugh at their face. And I said, you know, God makes sprinters, you know.
Yeah, yep.
And, you know, you might make a good 800-meter run. Well, what's that? That's two laps. Two laps! Well, maybe track isn't – if two laps freaks you out, track is probably not your sport, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's the thing. We talk about this all the time, you know, commitment, 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 you know, and take action. And it is a hard sell for a lot of people because when you watch stuff on TV, you're not really, you know, you're talking about like yourself, or I can say myself, you know, I train alone, you know, sometimes it can get very lonely out there. Some nights you're pretty beat up, but you're still out there because you got a job to do and there's no cheering section in this. But the problem is a lot of people, and that's most always like see the end result of the athlete pulling off the biggest win of his or her life, faster than anybody, stronger than anybody, more enduring than anybody, but they don't see the A to, you know, X or Y. You know what I mean? Because in that middle, as you know, and all of us know that listen to this show, there's a lot of pain there. And if you can't endure that and keep coming back and understanding, okay, what do I got to do to change this whole thing? Do I have to pull something out, put something in? Do I train more frequently? Maybe do I move one day? Whatever it is you have to do to get yourself back on track. And do this for years, not minutes, days. You know, we're talking decades here. This is a big thing. And I think right now we are at that point where athletics, we see the whole glamour of it on television. But you know what? You and I both know when you're working maybe in a barn, or in my case, I'm in a one-car garage where it's not pretty, but it's got every damn thing you could do to get any way you want to do. That's not real attractive to most people.
Nope.
So how how the thing I'm trying to say here is this. We're trying to convey a message here like we always do. And the message I'm saying, and I want you to comment on this, obviously, is I just want to tell everybody, I think you should go for your dreams. I think everybody's got potential. Everybody has greatness. But you know what? It's not just going to fall on your lap. How many great athletes had the abilities, but they didn't have the desire? And then you get somebody maybe that was, they would call them mediocre or a little better, but they had this drive and leadership in them that brought them to places that if they didn't have that, they didn't have the skill base to get there, but they had a little bit more than the guy that had everything. So comment on that, Dan. What do you see, like, in, especially with what you're doing with athletes, and what do you think, I mean, the whole thing I just spoke about, just comment on, please.
Well, this is awful, but the best athletes I've ever worked with got something going on, like in the home, in their life. It's not perfect.
Right.
And they find meaning in their practice. And that's a hard thing to invent.
Yep.
You know, I don't want to go to a mother and father and say, man, it'd be really helpful if you guys had a really ugly affair and divorce. That would really help your kid. He needs, you know, little Edna needs some tragedy in her home to be a better thrower, you know. But it's funny, I think what high-level sports does is it fills a gap that, you know, in a person that is missing. And what I'm saying is the truth. That's why, a buddy of mine played in the NFL a long time, and I think this number, but it's like well over 70% of guys in the NFL come from single parent homes.
Yep.
And, it's to play at a high level of football, you need to have, there needs to be a hunger that needs to be filled. And, this skill set of being out by yourself training, when it's snowing, when it's 110, all in between, how are you filling that in? You know, if you don't mind, one quick thing I emphasize with my athletes a lot is instead of we talk about goal setting obviously a lot, achieving goals, but I always discern that achieving goals is one thing, being successful is another.
Mm-hmm.
So I constantly remind them that, you know, you might not be the state champion, but you can still be a success. Like one of my athletes are currently my doctor, my lawyer, and my mortician.
Or nice.
Former athletes. A name came up recently about, Supreme Court justices vacancies, and one of my former athletes' name came up.
Yep.
So that to me is success, That's part of success. And so we constantly try to tell the kids, you might not make, you want to make an Olympic team, but, your DNA might hold you back from that.
Mm-hmm.
But you might have a fabulous education, meet the person of your dreams, have a wonderful family, have a successful life based on the discipline that you learned out here with me.
Yep.
And so for me, that's success. And that's something I emphasize probably more than a lot of coaches, because frankly, it's funny because this party the other night, we're talking about some of these boys that were on these state championship teams who play maybe 5 weeks of college football and then come back and, coach at the old high school. And they're looking, they're kind of, that Glory Days song Bruce Springsteen. Trying to fill some woulda, coulda, shoulda story that they had in their brain, So for me, I'd much rather have I barely have ever seen some of my most successful athletes ever again. They go away to college. Nick is a filmmaker living in London now. I mean, I see him once or twice a decade. We stay in touch, but that's successful to me.
Sure it is.
Yeah.
Well, obviously your teaching has done what it needed to do. And, you know, as young men and young women, you know, you learn responsibility, and that's what's going to really carry you. Something I want to ask you, because you've seen a lot of athletes at every level. And, I mean, I don't know if you can answer it with one name, but I'm very interested, and I know the listeners would be too. If you had to probably name – I want to see how I'm going to word this one. We just talked about success in a different way. Tell me one athlete in any sport that impressed you probably the most just by the way they conducted themselves. By that, I mean, not only were they successful athletes, would they be somebody that you would welcome into your home, say, at Christmas or whatever? Like, would you bring them around your daughters and your wife and your family members? Is there anybody that comes to mind?
I would say probably some 500 people I've worked with.
I'm sure, but I'm not trying to get you to insult anybody, but, yeah. But is there any major figure you would say?
Well, in my own case, just Paul Northway would be one of them. He was my national champ discus thrower at high school in 1996. But what I love about Paul is that I learned so much from him. That's why, I mean, he was an adolescent, and literally I would take notes when he would come up with an insight. So, but we've had, that's funny, a couple of years back, my daughters were in middle school, and they came home, they said, "Dad, today an Olympian showed up at school." They were both so impressed. And so my wife said I had this look of utter anguish on my face. And then later that night, I went through all the Olympians and professional athletes and high-level military that they grew up with. But it was Brian and John. It was, you know, it was Stefan and Joran. So they grew up. My daughters were held by Olympians, both of them, the first days of their life. But they grew up with it. So we've had many, people fart at our breakfast table.
Go ahead.
Gosh, you know, NBA guys like Walt Palmer, he played 17 years, and there's just so many guys that have done what you said. So, yeah, I got to tell you, I've been very lucky that the bulk of my interactions have been very positive. With the military especially, I tend to be around the officer corps, so even of the elite groups. So I'm kind of lucky in that case. When people ask me, what does it take to be in special operations, I always say, well, let me tell you what happens after every meal. I say, don't worry, I'll clean up. They say, no, that's my job. Every inch of my kitchen is wiped down, cleaned, swept. Every counter is wiped and dried.
Yep.
The attention to detail is the thing that just makes you go, okay, this is what makes them better. And the guys who came from the academy, the guys who then become either fighter pilots or special forces, now, those guys, you learn some lessons from, and you just sit on bended knee when they tell you something. Yeah.
Yep. Olympic lifting, most impressive athlete you've ever seen. And I know it's probably more than one, but give me, if you can't name your favorite, give me a couple.
I'll just give you a quick funny story.
Okay.
On August 28th, 1977.
Okay.
Bruce Wilhelm became the first person ever to snatch 400 pounds, first American.
Yep.
Okay? So we were at a weightlifting meet, and there were seven of us. So opening the clean and jerk 5 minutes later was little Danny John. My opening clean and jerk was 336.
Awesome.
I was the first person to lift in the meet, in the clean
awesome.
And jerk.
Yep.
At 336, I was the warm-up show.
Yep.
So I got to tell you, only because I was there and I saw it, I've always thought that Bruce's lift was great. Now, Mario Martinez and I were great friends a long time.
Yep.
Ken Clark, too. I would consider them friends. So what I would say, and I don't remember the German's name, But at that last Olympics, when that German heavyweight came out.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I know who you mean, though.
And had added like 20K to his clean and jerk to win, and yep. did it for his wife who died. I mean, in my whole life, I don't think I've ever seen anything more beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you don't mind, he would be my non-American, and Bruce, yeah. Mario, and Ken would be my Americans, yeah.
Powerlifting, you were around in the era of Eddie Cohn, obviously.
Sure.
I'm sure you know you've been involved. Powerlifter, who would you say? I know you can't name one, but
no. Of course you're going to say Kirk and you're going to say Ed.
Nah.
But for me, it's their coach Marty Gallagher.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. Because when you sit down with Marty Gallagher for an hour, you walk away going, it's that simple.
Yeah.
It's that simple. What?
Well, we're going to try to get him on here because Mike Gillette, who's a yeah. good friend of the show, keeps bugging me, you know, contact him. You know, he might come on, he might not, but he goes, if you can get him on the show, you're going to have a blast with him. So.
He lights out. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
It might not work with him on a talk show, but I got to tell you, if you got a piece of paper and you're sitting at a kitchen table, it's PhD, man. It's a PhD yeah. program.
Awesome. Yeah. So I know you follow strongman too. Who's one of your are you going to say Bill Kazmaier on me? Who's
no.
the strongman you like?
No, I like that Gail Gillingham guy.
Okay, yeah, USA.
The reason I like him is that I mean he does the whole thing. I also think like when he talks to the sportscasters, I always feel like we're working with somebody that's. You know, I get the sense, I could be wrong, but I've been wrong many times, but I get the sense that he's a bit more of a gentleman than a, you know, he seems like a real decent guy.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah,
I got
that's you. Important to me, you know.
Oh, I think it is too, because you know something, perception is very important because you don't know who's out watching you. And I say to people, you know, especially now with the business, I'm very careful who I'm around, who I associate with, what type of actions I'm taking if I'm out in public, because, you know, you can end up destroying everything you've built by one wrong move. And, I think that you got to be very cognizant of that. And, you know, I have a lot of young nieces and nephews. I have to be very careful in front of them, in my opinion, you know, language wise, all kinds of things, which, it's nothing, you know, but I, you know, they're looking at their father, their uncles, especially the girls. I have four nieces between 13 and 8. And I want them to see strong men in every way, not just physically and the outer presence, but just good men in general, because I'm hoping that will rub off on them enough where when they have to make choices to go out with, you know, men and they make the right choices. And, I think today that's very, very important. So I'm with you. I think how you conduct yourself, you come off very genuine. And anything you talk about, you've done, especially with what we're talking about here today. Because the minute someone finds out you're not what you are, especially in this business, you're not going to be in business long. So I totally agree with you. I think you should be a gentleman. And you should know how to conduct yourself properly.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like in our business with the anabolic thing that floats out there. And, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, if you join a certain gym or get on a certain team, even if you just choose to stay clean, no one's ever going to believe you. If you hang around certain places and you say that dirt rubs on you, and I'm not – dirt. I mean, you know, if you play with the pigs, you're gonna get muddy, you know.
Yeah.
And I tell my guys that, and you know, there's certain coaches in my areas that we all know that people go to them and they have this, you know, the athlete has a magic 10% improvement in 6 weeks.
Yep.
You know, and then they'll say it's because they move their incline bench press grip in 1 inch. I mean,
yeah, okay. Yeah.
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 Seriously, I look that stupid, really.
Believe it or not, though, you can imagine most people would probably believe. Yeah, I know what you're saying. It's, you know, go ahead.
And my thing about drugs is this, and this is just, this isn't me on a, but I'm 58. The bulk of the guys I competed with are dead. It's a rare couple of weeks where someone I know, I don't get an email from a friend that says something along the lines, you know, XYZ died. And, I'm stunned. Guys I consider, you know, very good friends, you know, and every so often someone will post a picture. Yeah, memories, 1985, meet here. And, you know, everyone's dead except for the guy who posted it, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, you've probably met this a number of times. A lot of the guys – you know, I haven't been in a gym now in 15 years, but prior to that, and I've met them since I've left there too, or wherever they're working out. Have you ever met guys, and it's like, it still floors me when I see it. You'll see a guy, all right, you know, there'll be bodybuilders or power lifters, whatever doing. And, you know, I know the look. I know what they're doing. You want to do that, that's your business. I go ahead. But then you'll see him for some reason. Either they stopped, they got sick from it and had to stop, or they just dropped out. You know, they got hurt, they couldn't come back, whatever. And you'll see him, and when you know him from the gym, you know, they'll always be walking around like they're king shit, or they'll be walking with their lats all flared out and this and that and the other thing and the attitude and all that. And then you meet them out. And at first you got to do a double take because you're not sure it's them, and they're all friendly to you, and now they've lost 50 pounds, and are you lifting anymore? Oh, yeah, I'm just lifting for fitness, you know, and I'm like, ha-ha, yeah, okay. So in your experiences, I'm sure you've met a lot of people like that, but isn't it funny when they're off any type of anabolic that they just seem to become I don't know. They're just so passive to me. You know what I mean? It's like I got to chuckle because my whole theory with training is this: when I'm 100 years old, I still want to be able to squat 250 pounds. Now that might sound bizarre to some people and everything, but you know what? I'm just looking down the road many, many decades from now and saying to myself, I got to have a long-range goal for 100 years old because I do have longevity in my family. My grandmother lived to 108 years old. It's there. But, you know, it's very interesting just to see people. I'll just leave it at that. But when you run into some old, whether they're friends or foes, and then you see them now, it's like, holy cow, man, you look like you never lifted a weight in your life.
Oh, yeah,
isn't it? I mean, but doesn't it kind of still startle you when you see them? I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, I want to ask them, are you okay? But, you know, I figure they're just off the stuff and it's like something happened and here we go. But, God, they're not even a shadow of what they looked like.
Yeah, I had a buddy tell me one time, he goes, you know, yeah, when I want, it only helped me, you know, the anabolics only helped me about 10%. Well, and I'm like, well, yeah, as a discus thrower, you know, if you throw 180, 10% sneaks you up right around 200 feet.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the difference between 180 and 200 is, you know, going from a good solid thrower to a national level thrower. Yeah. And, it's a big difference.
Yeah, a little bit there, yeah.
Just kind of waved his hand like it was no big deal at all. I had another guy told me he thought he was at 20%. But, you know, those I'm not going to mention names, but I've heard a few people that they are just born, their body is born to do it better than ours. That's all. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Well, you know, and the thing is, what made me kind of chuckle was, you know, when ESPN dropped the World's Strongest Man because they said that, you know, they discovered that these athletes were all taking steroids. Yeah. And they said, we put on CrossFit because, right, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then what happened? Was it 2 months ago? A bunch of them got busted for anabolics. And I was like, are you kidding me? Every sport on ESPN, all right, let's not say everybody. I won't put everybody under the same umbrella. Look at NFL players. They all got the same physique of a bodybuilder. What do you think they're doing there, okay?
Well,
and go ahead.
That famous golfer who
weighed 185 and supposedly benched 3, and his doctor got nailed coming across. You'll notice that he has struggled with his career as and I'm not going to mention names, but you can figure it out.
Well, I think too, you know, he wasn't the greatest golfer ever. He was talented, but you know what? We'll give credence to the weights a little bit, because you and I both know if you know how to construct something, you can build a hell of an athlete if they want to do it. But let's face it, he was taking the best stuff he could take, and he was under guidance of a guy that was involved with athletes all over the place, and it did enhance him. I mean, they figured he would be able to go till he was 50 years old at the rate he was moving. Sure. I mean, obviously, you get to that age where you got to go into the senior tour anyways. But the point of the matter is, too, he got in a lot of trouble, and I'm sure his outside troubles had been there long before finally the whole big deal got publicized with his ex-wife. We all know that a lot of these guys, you know, they got press everywhere that covers up, pays people off, et cetera, et cetera. But what happened was the weight got too heavy on him, so to speak, and everything was coming apart at the seams, and just suddenly, man, bang. Now you look at him. I love to hear people say even up to like 3 or 4, he'll win another major. He will never win another major as long as I'm alive. And hopefully I'm alive till I'm 100. But I'm just saying, when I hear that now, does he draw well? I don't know anymore if he could. I mean, there's a lot of new young guys that are out there winning consistently now. They seem to really draw crowds in golf. But he's never winning another major. And, you know, now all you hear is this: well, I'm hurt, I need surgery. I'm hurt, I need surgery. Oh, I didn't make the cut. Well, I would say his career, I don't know what he's doing endorsement-wise or anything anymore, but I don't see much for him down the road, other than a guy that's going to probably make money signing autographs and golf balls.
Right.
You know? That's the whole thing with this. And this is what I love about weightlifting. And I want you to comment on this, Dan, because I think – I ask myself every morning when I get up, why do I lift weights? I ask it every day. I've asked people on this show many times the question, and they stop, and then they'll come up with an answer. And sometimes it will be the same thing everybody else is saying, but I think it's good to ask yourself questions like that. Why are you doing something you love? Do you still have the passion for it you did 25, 30 years ago when you started out? Where do you want to go with it? Where do you see yourself in 2 years? I think all those things are very important questions. But one thing I will say about weightlifting, and I'm very proud of the idea of it, is this. If you don't screw yourself up real bad, if you don't kill yourself through whether it's anabolic means or just doing things wrong, Isn't it one of the greatest sports where you can really do this stuff the rest of your life at any capacity?
Oh, absolutely. Here's the thing, you know, I've been lifting weights. This is my 50th year of lifting weights.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, I started lifting weights in 1965, and in 2 years I'll be 60, which means I'll be in that great category for master athletics. The 60 is really when it gets easy. And so for me, I am strongly focused right now on building that foundation and base again that I can start doing the, you know, getting back into the throws. I love to throw stuff. And, you know, I've had the surgeries I need to fix. I had a hernia. I had a needed a hip. And those are all fixed. They're behind me. I've got my cortisol problems, the constant pain under control. There's no more pain. So for me, I mean, I get up certainly five days a week and lift, very often six, walk the dog and ride my bike every day, just like my coach Dick Notmeyer told me. And I just can't imagine not doing this kind of thing.
I'm with you.
And that's the thing, and that's what I've tried to propose to people out here listening to the show is this. It's like, if you take good care of yourself, you're going to be able to do this forever. You figure the average NFL guy, what, maybe they get 3 to 5 years. I mean, you know, a guy like Montana and a few of those guys, they're all exceptions to the rule. I mean, there's a few of them out there. We know that. But really, your lifespan for anything like that is not long. Baseball, yeah, you see some guys make it 20 years. But it's here and gone with a lot of them. And, you know, the NBA, I mean, you're always one click away from blowing a kneecap out or some other injury. So, you know, weightlifting's been very good to me, and it's taught me, you know, other than my parents building my foundation for me, there's never been a better teacher than lifting weights, than lifting stones, than the trials and tribulations that you go through, the pain you go through, the times you want to quit, the times you don't know what the hell to do anymore. You're faced with things. You know, going over to Iceland for the biggest thing in my entire life, tearing a bicep, you know, lifting a 396-pound stone. All these things like that, coming back on Icelandic air, feeling lower than I ever did in my life, and then, you know, it took my good friend John Ridge, who was my chiropractor for years, who just passed away, you know, saying to me, do you realize you did something that very few people in the entire world would, let alone attempt, but even try, you know, and telling me how proud he was of me and things of that. And that just seemed to change the whole scope of that injury when it happened. And I'm not naive. I know injuries happen with what we do. You play with big toys, you can get in big trouble. But the point of the matter is lifting has been the best thing I've ever done, in my opinion, besides starting this business and making this hopefully bigger than anything that's ever been on the universe on both ends of the business. And I owe it all to my parents and weightlifting and the belief in myself and the commitment and the discipline through all these years to keep going, to teach, to be there for people, and most of all, enjoy it. I've never made it painful on myself where I didn't want to enjoy it. I'm my harshest critic. There's no doubt about it. I can be very hard on myself, nasty to myself, but on the other hand, it's taught me so many life lessons, and it's taught me how to think, how to create, and how to make whatever I want come true. I've been very lucky. I've been very good with it. And the only thing I'm waiting on is next year we got to go back to Iceland and get that Husafell stone, and then we go to Scotland and get them. So that's what I'll say with what I'm into.
That's great to hear. That's great to hear.
Dan, you've been around longer than me, but you got to, you know, tell everybody, is it the greatest stuff or what? It really is. I mean,
if I'm going to have an addiction, I prefer this than a lot of the other.
Me too. I'd rather have this than drinking bourbon. You know what I'm saying? It's something like that. It's so meaningful. And you know, everybody talks about faith. Well, you got to have so much faith in yourself and you know, in God and all that stuff. It's like you got to have such deep beliefs in things that people don't even think about. They take for granted. You know, I just love the idea that you got to get to know yourself, man. And you got all these things going on, and you got to learn to be quiet, and you got to learn how to breathe, and you got to get up when it's cold. And like last year, I ran out of heat one day, and I'm front squatting, and it was like 20 below. And then, you know, you don't think, I sweat even at 20 below. And I try to rack the bar because I'm not grabbing it as an Olympic lifter. I've got it across my shoulders, basically, with my, you know, my arms crossed. And the damn bar stuck to my throat as I tried to rack the thing. So, and then I do crazy stuff like, you know, they say in Iceland, if you're a real Viking, you know, you don't wear a shirt out no matter what the weather. So one day I go out and do that. It's zero. And I'm carrying a stone around. I go to drop the thing, and it's a little bit stuck to my skin. And I got no hot water to pour on it. So you know what I got to do. And I've still got two round scars on my pectorals to remind me of that. So you know what I mean? It's been all good. How's that?
Yeah. I've got a few scars, you know.
Well, you know what those guys told me in Iceland when I tore my bicep, and at first I wanted to beat them up, man. It was like, don't worry. You know, they got the thing. It's like, Eric, don't worry. You got a permanent scar forever. And you know what? I'm glad I got it.
That's right.
I'm going hopefully to heaven or Valhalla or somewhere, and we can all compare scars. That's how I look at it. It's a great thing. Dan, why don't you summarize anything you want, and then give your information. I'll give mine, and just hang on the line if you would, please, and we'll talk for a minute offline.
Well, I mean, for me, it's when people ask me to summarize my coaching, I always tell them, It's the fundamental human movements for appropriate reps and sets and appropriate load. People say, that's pretty boring. I go, I know. Because the basics and the fundamentals are going to trump everything sexy and new. And
yep.
So when I coach the discus, we say stretch 1, 2, 3, probably 10,000 times a day. When I coach football, I reiterate the same issues when I coach lifting. So one of the things I would tell anybody, no matter what the field you're getting into, is put your arms around the fundamentals, put your arms around the basics, and you will always be more right than wrong doing that.
Totally.
So
and that's what,
Dan John at danjohn.net. I have a on Amazon. You can find my stuff on Amazon, Dan John, and you know, enjoy.
Okay. Hi, this is Motivation Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We are sponsored by Dr. Wong's Essentials, www.docsprefer.com, Sorenex.com, obviously Hearts Collision. This is for New York State residents. And we also are at adxclub.com. So check out those folks and tell them we sent you. Also, don't forget about top 10 ways to build mind and muscle. Dan was just talking about basics. That's what this is, 10 paragraphs of basics, thought-provoking. You know, commit. Go do something. Take action. I mean, it's not as hard as everybody portrays it out there. You just got to have a little bit more grit than everybody else. Take a chance on yourself. Also, strength times power equals success in the winner's circle. Those are the two big items right now. And we're getting ready to release both of them. I do believe they are game-changing and life-changing. I've done some big stuff with that. The strength times power, that's when we knocked. We took Dennis from 267 to 224 using a lot of the mythology of there. I mean, that guy was pre-diabetic. We got him down to that weight, 224 in 6 months. The winner's circle is all audio. It's got all types of routines, everything I've been doing up to this point, power rack training, using the old York iron boots. We could have one called sandbag domination. Obviously, we talk about the will, the way to achieve, the way to do things. So check those both out at FiorelloBarbellCo.com. Sponsorship, too, that's the same thing like we talked about. It's $500 a month, but, I mean, you're getting 5 to 15 shows a week. I mean, that's unheard of. And like I said, we're going to build our audience to over a million, and that $30 is going to muscular dystrophy, and that's very dear to me. That's what both of these enterprises, FBC and M&M, are dedicated to Jimmy. And it's something that you'd have to see it to believe these kids. They're incredible. So go out to FiorelloBarbellCo.com or MotivationMuscle.com. The form is there. It's very straightforward. Just fill it out. Chris Bigelow does all the work here, MonsterDevelopment.com, 800-687-1609, FiorelloBarbellCo.com, MotivationAndMuscle.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. Give us a 5-star review. Everybody else has, and we thank them for that. Facebook, Fiorello Barbell, Motivation and Muscle, Twitter, at Fiorello Eric. And I'll leave you with these four things. If you meet someone in the gym or the concrete jungle and they seek you out, do not be afraid to speak to them. Words can change, man. Words can make big strides in your life. You never know who needs that. Be a steward of strength. Don't be afraid. Don't sit on the sidelines. Second of all, as my mom always said when we were kids, never be afraid to say hello to somebody or give them a smile, because that might be all they get that day. Take a look and watch it. All the people are walking with their head down. I think it's very prevalent today, more so than ever. Thirdly, get out there tonight. That's what I'll be doing. Go out there and bend up some iron and turn some stones into dust. And like our Hoosa Steel Stone, the Crusher, says on both sides in blood red domination, we are domination, and we are going to be over a million strong. And remember two things. No one's going to ever clip our balls. And number two, as Russell Fur says, when I listen to your show, I swear there's testosterone dripping out of my speakers. So, Russell, thanks. We love that. Dan, thanks for being on the show, sir.
Absolutely. Enjoyed it.
Thank you, sir. For Dan John, this is Eric Fiorello. Thanks for listening. We'll be busy all week, and we hope we'll get Dan on again. It was totally enjoyable. Go out there and do something. Make the world a better place. Thanks, everybody. Have a good